Parshat Shmini, on food justice. As a child, I didn't think very much about what I ate. I wasn't concerned with the cost or the nutritional value. I certainly never thought about the quality of the kashrut or about the ethical dimensions of what was involved in bringing food to my table. It wasn't that I disregarded those concerns per se. I was just oblivious about them. When I began adhering to the Jewish traditions around food consumption, I experienced a spiritual awakening. Never before in my life had I applied so much self-restraint. When I was younger, I never paused to consider what I was eating. Now I thought about each bite as an opportunity to fulfill a moral imperative. Yet the contemporary reality of kashrut poses pronounced difficulty for me. I view the commitment to the timeless ritual of holy kosher laws as central to Jewish survival and continuity. Yet my kosher diet did not reflect any particular ethical pursuit per se, and was merely connected to my commitment to Torah. My deeper awakening of kosher consciousness only emerged after I realized that mechanisms of kashrut were touchstones for a much deeper value system. Indeed, I began to realize that the opportunities for food consciousness were vast. I began to appreciate the deeper temporal dimensions of kashrut as a vision, its overall effects on human health, worker treatment, animal welfare, care for the environment, and the scourge of poverty. Corresponding to the ethical call of kashrut, a personal spirituality of consumption began to stir within my soul. Consequently, I wondered why this spiritual element seemed absent from the broader communal consciousness. For instance, why, as demand for kosher meat grew, did kosher slaughter follow the trend of the non-kosher meat industry towards mass industrial production methods, with animals often penned in for extended periods of time in the harshest conditions? How could a community as demanding and painstakingly particular about the traditions of kashrut allow for such treatment of animals deemed so inhumane in secular culture? Something deeply troubling, spiritually unsettling, took hold in the Jewish community. Could a different voice, steeped in the love of Torah and mitzvot, reverent toward the sages and sensitive to the pace of change, call for a kosher consciousness to emerge? Or better yet, to revive? The laws of kashrut found in Parshat Shmini are for some the most spiritually powerful among the everyday Jewish rituals. For others, the system seems archaic and out of touch with their food choices. How might our Torah teachings on kashrut inspire a great moral and spiritual revolution, both for those committed to traditional kashrut and those who are not? In the depths of Jewish tradition, there's one refrain that echoes through each and every law: to do what is yashar v'tov, what is right and good. For millennia, the purpose of living a Jewish life meant to uplift the soul to perform its heavenly duties here on earth and bring about positive change to a world occupied with conflict. Yet the contemporary reality of kashrut poses pronounced difficulty for the Jewish people. A commitment to the timeless ritual of kosher laws is a powerful vehicle for Jewish survival and continuity. Yet kosher does not always reflect any particular ethical pursuit per se. For many, it's merely connected to a commitment to Torah tradition without any deeper moral relevancy. The spiritual enterprise of kashrut in its totality can be reframed in regards to our ethical appreciation of humanity, to tend to the earth and to the heavens, including tending to the virtues of human health, worker treatment, animal welfare, care for the environment, and ending the scourge of poverty. At heart, kashrut is about dignity. An anecdote about a rabbinic ethicist helps us understand this concept. Rav Yisrael Salanter was the founder of Judaism's modern caretaker development movement, Musar. One spring before Passover, he was called to certify the kosher status of a matzah factory. As he inspected the factory, he observed the conditions thoroughly. He saw that the matzah, the unleavened bread, was made according to the letter of halacha, according to Jewish law. Yet after inspecting every aspect of the factory, Rabbi Salanter refused certification. Why? Rabbi Salanter explained that he refused to certify the products of the factory because of the poor treatment of the workers. These women were overworked. They were paid poorly. Their needs were ignored. Because his moral compass would not allow the consumption of products prepared unethically, Rabbi Salanter refused to certify the factory's matzah as fit for use on the holiday. on which Jews tell the story of their ancestors' release from enslavement. Related to this story, when we see immigrant workers in restaurants, or when we don't see these invisible people, do we understand how easy it is for them to be exploited for their work because they do not enjoy the rights and protections that citizens have? In all we do, dignity must be at the forefront of our minds. A significant component that sustains the Jewish concept of human dignity is the notion that dignity is connected to our empowerment through labor in the world as a partner with God to mold creation. Yet, what is the limit between people using God's power to bring new things to the world and us going beyond God's will by taking over power traditionally attributed to God? Human dignity was a foremost issue in the philosophical thought of Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, known popularly as the Rav, and was a dominant theme in his extensive writings. Indeed, he writes that there are two moralities, a morality of majesty and a morality of humility. The moral gesture of cosmic man aims at majesty or kingship. The highest moral achievement for cosmic man is sovereignty. Man wants to be king. God is the king of the world. Man, imitating God, quests for kingship, not only over a limited domain, but over the far and distant regions of the cosmos. Man is summoned by God to be the ruler, to be king, to be victorious. Victory is the most important aspect of kingship, is an ethical goal, and the human effort to achieve victory is a moral one, provided the means man employs are of a moral nature. Contrary to the seemingly contradictory nature of those two positions, the Rav argues that these worldviews are not, in fact, in competition with one another. Rather, from his vantage point, the differences between God and humanity are complementary forces, forces that people are supposed to harness and preserve to keep in balance. He wrote, "Nature surrenders voluntarily to man's control and rule. She entrusts man with her most guarded secrets. Is more cooperation than dominion, more partnership than subordination? Let us watch out for moments of tension and conflict, when nature begins to hate man and to resent his presence. If nature refuses to be dominated, man is left helpless and weak. This is man's freedom, either to live at peace with nature and thus give expression to a natural existence in the noblest of terms, or to surpass his archaic bounds and corrupt himself and nature." For the Rav, the need to work and the action of working are not only deemed moral, but a key part of Jewish practice. In respecting work, we respect the worker. Rather than be confined by the private sphere and study hall, the Rav argues that the halakha penetrates into every nook and cranny of life. The marketplace, the street, the factory, the house, the meeting place, the banquet hall, all constitute the backdrop for the religious life. In the late 1950s, there were many attempts on the state and federal levels to ban kosher slaughter. The Rav was appointed the spokesman by the Synagogue Council of America to represent the American Jewish community. While the Rav, of course, defended the Jewish right to maintain Jewish ritual, he also challenged the Jewish community to establish more humane methods for animal treatment, opposed shackle and hoist, and worked in partnership with the ASPCA to develop a pen. Further, it's been noted numerous times that the Rav believed vegetarianism to be a Torah ideal. One commentator writes in Yeshiva University's Kol HaMavaser, "Unlike Rabbi Cooks and Albo, Rav Soloveitchik has no reservations concerning vegetarianism and affirms it both as an ideal and a practice. He believes that all life, even animal life, is sanctified. Hence, according to Rav Soloveitchik, vegetarianism should be practiced. Yet man, too desirous for meat, refuses to stop eating animal flesh." Some of the Rav's closest students took this message of ethical kashrut to another level in the societal realm. Consider, for example, this 2008 interview with Rabbi Haskell Lookstein and Rabbi Dr. Yitz Greenberg in the Jerusalem Post. When asked why they declared for non-union lettuce and grapes to be boycotted back in the Cesar Chavez movement, they said, "From him, we learned the idea that halakha is not just a list of ritual do's and don'ts, but a comprehensive worldview that applies to everything that happens around us. The Torah prohibits the exploitation of workers, So why shouldn't that apply to migrant farm workers picking lettuce or grapes? They were being mistreated. So it was natural for us to apply the principle of non-exploitation to their situation also. It seemed obvious. Such a commitment to ethical concerns, while technically separate from the kosher laws themselves, shows that supplemental but vital moral mandates have always been interwoven with ritual laws. Indeed, when we don't remember that we are here to respect and cherish the works of the divine, we concede our moral primacy as human beings. Hopefully, this is not so, and kosher consumers will move towards more concern for animal welfare, which will impact all corners of the meat industry. Kosher consumers will wish to return the industry to a more accountable scale, and ever-growing numbers should be agitating for change. The American kosher industry will continue to import meat from Uruguay and Argentina and other major exporters, where cruel methods of slaughter will continue unabated if kosher consumers keep purchasing it. Frankly, the elevation of bottom lines over godly respect for animals should bring about greater communal introspection about our sacred duty as stewards of the earth. Nachmanides, also known as the Ramban, wrote that a person can be Naval Bereshut HaTorah, a repulsive person with the permission of the Torah. It's not enough, he argued, to follow the letter of the law. If we wish to be moral and holy, we must go further. His specific example, in fact, is one who keeps kosher, but is morally oblivious and gluttonous with kosher meat. Kashrut is indeed about far more than some technical ritual preparation laws. Rabbi Soloveitchik has been credited with the expounding on the thought that halakha is a floor, not a ceiling. We fulfill the basic ritual requirements, but that's only the beginning to consider the moral and spiritual dimensions involved with each religious act. When we read Parshat Shemini, let us be inspired by the timeless traditions to keep the Jewish people nourished and also reflect on the ethical dimensions of food consumption that help enable us to thrive morally. Shabbat Shalom.